It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 19th edition of Wayne's Comics. This week I get to speak with Brendan Dineen from Arden Entertainment, who brings us great books like Flash Gordon, Comeback Kings, and has a lot to do with Atlas Comics as well. I'll also be talking with Dave Romeo from the Comics on the Green store in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He knows a lot about the business aspects and is on the front lines of comics, so he can tell us a lot about how the DC Comics changes are going over. Also, of course, I'll be looking into the local comics store, and I'll be reviewing this week's comics. So let's get to it. Talking today with Brendan Dineen of Arden Comics as well as Atlas Comics. And how are you doing today, Brendan?
I'm good, Wayne. I appreciate you making the time to interview me.
Oh, sure. Now, you're in charge of Arden Comics. And
it's actually Arden Entertainment, a small distinction, but
important
a distinction nonetheless. And then, of course, Atlas Comics is our sister company, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get into comics, first of all?
Well, I've been reading them pretty much my entire reading life. My brother gave me... I took from my brother the small pocket digest size reprints of the old Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, Spider-Man issues, probably the first 20 issues or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I just fell in love with the form as a very young kid. And it's pretty much as soon as I could start mailing my own letters, I started submitting ideas to Marvel and DC in the 80s without much success, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There was one editor named Neil Posner, who has since passed away at DC, who was actually very responsive and very encouraging, and that was exciting. I got relatively close on a couple of ideas with him. And as a junior or senior in high school, that was very exciting, even though it didn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 19, I continued to submit things during college and submitted an idea to Karen Berger at Vertigo called Scatterbrain. Never heard back from her. But that idea stuck with me. And so years later, when I was working at Dimension Films and Miramax Films and scouting the comic book market for movie ideas, I came across this guy, Richard Ems, who's now my business partner. And he was based in the UK, and he was coming to New York to visit the Wizard magazine offices, and he invited me to go along with him, which I accepted. And we took a bus up to Congers, New York, where their offices were located at the time. And we were just talking about comics and how much we love them, and I ended up pitching this Scatterbrain idea, and he loved it. And about 15 years after I had sent that idea to Vertigo, it came out via Marcosia, which is a small UK publisher.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent a copy of the comic, number one, along with my old letter to Karen Berger, but once again, I didn't hear back from her. I thought she'd appreciate the story, but maybe not. And so that was my first experience as a comic book writer, which was amazing after trying to be a published comic writer for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rich left Marcosia, and I figured my comic writing career was done, which was fine. I loved it, but I knew that it's a very difficult industry to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of out of the blue one day, he said, "Hey, talking with the rights holders of Flash Gordon, do you want to come up with a pitch?" And I saw that movie in 1980 when I was 8 years old. And I was like, hell yeah, I'll write up a pitch. So I wrote, I think, a 5-page pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the license somehow as sort of nobodies. They loved my pitch. We got the license. And I actually approached a couple different comic book companies with this and Image Comics, and no one responded.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if it was Rich or myself who decided, let's just self-publish Flash Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
That was the start of Arden Entertainment. People are confused by our company name because it's hard to spell.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's the last several letters of Richard's first name and the first several letters of my last name. So that's why the two D's, and that's where Arden comes from. So it's Richard, and then Dineen smashes into Arden.
Cool.
It's a riveting story.
I like to know how things got the way they are, so that's important to me.
Flash Gordon was a pretty much immediate success for us. It sort of put us on the map. We tried a couple creator-owned books early on, probably a little too fast. That didn't really come together, unfortunately. And then we were able to reach out. Our editor-in-chief back then was J.M. DeMatteis. Mark and I were and still are close, even though he's not the EIC anymore. But he and I were talking at New York Comic Con about Casper and Wendy and Hot Stuff, and we brainstormed an idea to bring all those three characters together. So we reached out to Classic Media, and then we did Casper and the Spectrals, which was another critically acclaimed book from us, a three-issue series of Casper, the Friendly Ghost, Wendy, and Hot Stuff. And that was great, and that further put us on the map. Mm-hmm. And then I was, once again, sort of sitting in my office one day and thinking about it. It's hard to find new properties, old properties to get into, and I just randomly thought of Atlas Comics. Mm-hmm. I think I was too young. I mean, I don't know if I was even born when they first came out. I might have been one year old. Mm-hmm. But I bought them all as a high school kid in the 25-cent bin. Mm-hmm. I really liked them back in the day. So I reached out to Jason Goodman, who is the grandson of Martin Goodman, who is the actual founder of Marvel Comics, mm-hmm. as most people know. Mm-hmm. You know, it took us about a year to do a deal because he had been approached by a number of people. And for whatever reason, you know, he and I really clicked. We're both in New York City. And I guess the rest is recent history. We publish three Atlas books now, reboots of Phoenix, which I co-write with Jim Krueger, mm-hmm. Wolf the Barbarian by Steve Niles and Nat Jones, mm-hmm. and then we got The Grim Ghost by Tony Isabella, Steve Susko, and Kelly Jones. And it's an intense industry to be in right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you just never know when you're going to have a success. Like, we just published this very small book called Comeback Kings. That's Bruce Lee, Elvis Morrison, Tupac, and Andy Kaufman teaming up. They all faked their deaths. Mm-hmm. And we had very modest expectations for that book. But that book sold out. Mm-hmm. So we're going to a second printing. It's exciting. You just never know what's going to hit. Mm-hmm. So we're really enjoying it.
Good. I've got that. You also have a new book that's come out recently called Minx. I like the character on that. I've got all the books, so I've been reading them. Why don't we go back and start at Flash Gordon? As you know, Flash Gordon is a very difficult thing to do because depending on people's expectations, when you take a classic character, sometimes they have ideas in their head as to how things are supposed to go. I did a discussion panel at a science fiction convention about Flash Gordon, and the guy who was sitting in the front row said, if he doesn't have like a pointy-headed helmet and ray guns, I'm not going to like it. And this was about the sci-fi show, which, of course, didn't do all that well either. And so to do a classic character, it takes some doing. When you approached him as a classic character, it sounds like you based some of this on the movie?
No, my take is directly based on Alex Raymond's strips. It's a great question. As soon as I got the gig, I bought every single one of those old Checker reprint books and read every single strip, taking copious amounts of notes. And so my take, well, especially the first arc, it's diverged a little bit now, but my first arc was a very direct interpretation of the first year or two of the original Flash Gordon strips, which was Flash Gordon, Dale Arden, Dr. Hans Zarkov get rocketed off to Mongo, which is run by Ming the Merciless. A bunch of people fighting against him for control of the planet. Prince Baron, King Thun, the Lion Man, Prince Voltan. Ming's got a beautiful daughter whose loyalties are not always clear, Princess Aura. And those are elements that I thought were 100% essential. Now, of course, you have to modernize them. Dale is not a damsel in distress. I made her a CIA agent. She's a badass in my version. Mm-hmm. But I am very true to the spirit of the Alex Raymond strips while also modernizing things. Mm-hmm. And every issue is including characters from the original strip. Every chance I get, I include characters or creatures from the original strips.
Mm. That's probably why it's going over really well. People have a fond memory of those strips. And, you know, there were movies, black and white films that came out based on them.
The mistake the show made is they tried to make it too far away from that. They were jumping back and forth between Earth and Mongo. They must have done that for budget reasons. But the whole point is that they're trapped on this planet. And if you have the ability to leave, it takes away a lot of the ticking clock or the narrative urgency.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stargate was kind of popular at that point. And so they had a Stargate, basically, a black hole they could jump back and forth through. And I think that was a mistake, too. But I actually sort of liked the show for what it was. I didn't really go nuts over it. But a lot of people really just hated the sight of it. And my friend Ian M. Cullen, who, if you want to get him angry, just mention that show because he just goes nuts when you talk
about it. Yeah, people hate it. Here's a quick, funny story. So I had submitted my idea to King, and they loved it. And then they called back and said, actually, we just found out we're doing a TV show, so we don't want two versions. Mm-hmm. And I said, how about I do a comic book set in the world of the TV show? So before the TV show even came out, they sent me the scripts for the first five episodes, which I read. Mm-hmm. And I came up with a comic book, a five-page treatment, which I have somewhere. I want to actually publish it in one of the trades. But I came up with a five-page treatment that took place between, I think, episodes 2 and 3 of the television show. Mm. And it was like My Wrath of Khan. And I have to dig that up and republish that in one of the trades. And then when the show didn't do well, I reapproached them, I don't know, 6 months later, said, hey, can I go back to my original idea? And that's sort of how it all came together.
Cool. Well, I like the art particularly. I enjoy the story and the characters. I think it's very true to Flash Gordon, which I think is why it's a success. I think you're right. It's a retelling, but not too far away from the original Flash Gordon. And I'm happy to see that. It's so rare when somebody gets a hold of a classic character and it flies. You've got DC's doing Doc Savage and the Spirit and stuff like that. And it's just not taking hold. Marvel's now come out with a thing called the Mystery Man. And they're all trying to get back to the pulp era. And right. I think the only one that's really done it with any sort of success is Flash Gordon. And I really think that's a great accomplishment for you all.
I am flattered beyond words. And I really appreciate that. It's just funny because I've always wanted to write comic books, and so when I got the chance, I wanted to take it really seriously, but also have fun with it. Like, if you read those original strips, they're fun, mm-hmm. you know, and they don't take it themselves too seriously. But I wanted to have a lot of dramatic tension, but Flash, he's a fun character. He's not, like, down-in-the-dumps, sour-faced character. He's larger than life, and he has fun.
Mm-hmm. I think that, again, you're bucking the trend of what a lot of comics have done. Batman has been very dark and moody for so long. They're trying to lighten him up right. a little. There's a book called Atomic Robo that when I interviewed the creators, they said they're tired of all the darkness in the comics. They wanted to have fun. And I think there's a place now for fun in comics. And it doesn't mean it has to be silly. It just means it has to be fun. And I think that right. Flash Gordon understands the difference and avoids the silly quite effectively. And I think that's a great thing.
I appreciate it.
Let's talk a little bit about Comeback Kings, because that's a very unique comic.
It's funny. I was approached near Comic-Con last year by these two guys, Matt Sullivan and Gabe. I'm going to mess up his last name, but Gabe Guarante. And as soon as I saw what it was, I was hooked. It's a satire about taking these characters and saying they all fake their own deaths and that they come together every now and then to stop crime. And it's just a funny, smart, very hip idea. And as a publisher, you put these things out there, and it's a risk. You know, you're spending money, and you just never know what's going to hit. And sometimes it hits, and sometimes it doesn't. I had no idea that this thing was going to really take off like it did. I mean, just the orders that have come through, like literally hour after hour, just 5 orders, 10 orders. It's just. Whatever reason has really clicked with people.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. At the bookstore where I order and get my books, guy behind the counter was going through the stuff and sorting things out, and he came across it. And he looked at it, and he says, if nobody wants this one, I want this. This looks like a great book. And then they went, and I'm standing there, you know, because I know I ordered it, and I'm waiting for them to put it into my stack. And all of a sudden they go, Wayne ordered it, so we'll have to order another one for you. The guy goes. And I was like, well, you know, I'd let you do it, except that I want it. I just think this is such a unique concept. You know, it's people we know. But you probably didn't have to go and get the licenses because basically they've all passed.
Well, it's not that so much as it's a satire. So there's no implication that these are real people, that these versions are real people. Mm-hmm. We're not casting them in a disparaging light.
No.
This is pure satire.
Well, of course, at the very end of the book, you bring back somebody who there's going to be a lot of interesting concepts about because...
Again, purely satirical, done satire purposes. But yeah, like I said, it's fun. Again, every book we put out is fun. That's our sort of our motto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good book. Minx, I'm curious about, too, before we get to Atlas. Minx is an interesting story. There's a lot of female characters that are getting play in comics these days. And she's half Native American, and the dreams, and that's a lot to do with Native American culture and things like that. I was just curious as to how that came to be.
Honestly, that book is 100% Andrea Grant. I worked with her on shaping the storyline. But this is actually the second incarnation of that character. She published a different incarnation a few years ago and actually heads with DC, who owned the character name, and she got a lot of press because she was going up against DC. Mm. But yeah, it's a fantastic concept, and it's a fun storyline. The Native American thing makes it really intriguing. It's got a Canadian thing going on. The Canadian government is actually involved in this book. She has a grant from the Canadian government to do this book. It's just a really fun, compelling, and also philosophical story, which is enjoyable. Mm-hmm. The bad news about Minx is that for a number of reasons, we're probably going to be going straight to trade for the rest of the issues.
Oh.
So it looks like the trade will be coming out for that in October for New York Comic Con. Just one of those things where the art's not coming in as fast as we need it to. It's a bummer, but...
Well, I'll buy the trade when it comes out because I really liked the first issue. I thought it was pretty good. Any more Casper coming before we get to Atlas?
No more Casper. They loved the classic media, love what we did, but they have this television show that's on around the world called Casper's Scare School. And I guess they're trying to consolidate the brand. So now I think they're actually publishing Casper's Scare School through another publisher, which is fine. I mean, we had a story to tell. We told it. I'm very, very proud. It's one of the books I'm the most proud of. And the 3 issues, it's out there, and I think it'll stand the test of time.
Great, great. Okay, Atlas. Are you happy with the response to Atlas?
I'm very happy with the critical response. You know, the sales are not as huge as we'd want them to be. But the industry is not 100% receptive to new titles, even if they're reboots. Certain people grew up with Atlas, love Atlas. But a lot of comic readers now, people who are younger, they've never even heard of it. So for all intents and purposes, for a large section of the audience, a brand new book. But the reorders we're getting are pretty astounding, and I think people are going to find it. I'm confident that people are going to continue to find the book. So critically, I'm very happy with it. Overall, the response has been very good, especially to Phoenix, which I co-write, which is, again, very gratifying for me. It's a struggle to sell any comic. I mean, Flash Gordon doesn't sell as well as I'd like it to either. It's a tough industry right now.
Well, the economy is struggling right now, too, so it makes people cut back on things like comics that aren't quite as necessary as other things.
Well, of course, and if you're a longtime collector and you have $4 for one book or $3 for one book and you've been reading X-Men forever, and even if you think Phoenix or Wolf looks fun, you're like, well, I've been reading X-Men forever. I'm going to buy that. So I get it. I mean, sure, I'm on a budget, too. I totally get it. But we're going to keep plugging along. We've been around for 3 years, and we're going to keep going.
Well, I've enjoyed all of them. I've read the issues 1 and 2 for all 3 of them. I'm fascinated that you're tying these very different characters together into a story. I like that. Is that an intent to make sure that the whole line kind of moves together?
You're talking about like Wolf and Lomax work?
Yeah. All of them are supposed to unite, and there's supposed to be a unified, isn't there, a crossover event?
Yeah, we're doing a crossover this fall. But yeah, no, we want to create a universe, and what we don't want to do is have these massive crossovers where you have to buy, you know, a million issues to understand. I mean, I hated that as a kid buying comics. And that whole idea started when I was in high school. I think it, like with Fall of the Mutants, that's when the sort of the evil Millennium and Secret Wars 2. I'd rather do something like the first Secret Wars where you just bought that 12 issues and that was it. You had the whole story. You didn't need to buy a million other things. Atlas Unified will probably be 4 issues. You won't need to buy anything else to understand the story, but it will further bring together these characters and probably will introduce a couple of new old characters as well.
That's great. You've got some people who I've always enjoyed their work, Steve Niles and Tony Isabella and Jim Kruger. Those are all good names in the comics industry and a lot of quality. So you're definitely putting the effort into it to making these books fly, and I really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you.
As far as the characters go, it was ironic because Ian and I were doing a podcast where we were talking about the characters and what ones we thought would fly. And the first one I said would be the Grim Ghost because I thought the concept was a good one. And Ian was very astonished when you announced that Grim Ghost was going to come out. He said, You got that right. And I said, well, yeah. He says, I like the character. I think that's a strong concept. So my hope is that these things will continue on and they'll just grow in popularity.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know Jason Goodman is committed to this, his family legacy. He didn't take bringing them back lightly. So when he did it, he's not going to be deterred by the sales or anything. And I do think we're going to continue to find an audience with trade, with digital comics. And then in terms of Arden's main titles, since, you know, Atlas is our sister company, but with Arden titles, Flash Gordon, we have 4 arcs total. So we're in the middle of our second arc right now. And then we have 2 more after this. So right now it's Invasion of the Red Sword. Next arc is The Vengeance of Ming. And then the final arc is King of the Impossible. So that'll run into next year, and then we'll be done with that. I have a very clear ending for that. I'm very excited about that.
Good.
We've got a number of new books coming out. Comeback Kings, obviously. We've got a book coming out this fall, which is sort of a rockabilly western thriller called The Devil is Due and Dreary, which is really cool. We've got sort of a teenage superhero runaway book called We Can Never Go Home, which is really a great love story between a teen girl and a teen boy. It's almost like a superhero Twilight kind of book, comic book. So we have to be cautious. We're small. We have limited resources. We're trying to be savvy about this. I've got deep connections in Hollywood. I hope to sell some of these properties into Hollywood. But most importantly, we want to tell great stories that people get to the end of the issue every month and want to read the next issue. I don't write for the trade. I don't believe in writing for the trade. I write for the person who goes to the store once a month and cannot wait for the next issue. Every issue that I write should have a cliffhanger. That's what comics do best.
I agree with that. I think that trades are wonderful things. They help people catch up. But there's this thing about going to the comic store every week and coming back with books you can't wait to get home and read that are really important. And I wish you much success with Arden. I hope we can talk to you again sometime soon and find out what other things you have going. But you have a lot of good stuff going, and I buy all of it. So I'm very excited about what you're doing.
Really cool of you. Yeah, look, I mean, like I said, this is a dream come true. This comes from someone who grew up reading comics, has been pitching ideas since he was 15. I am pleasantly surprised to be doing this. It's not always easy. It's a lot of work. It's difficult to make something a success, but this is a fun industry to be in, and I think if you approach it with the right attitude and you really love what you're doing, you have a shot at actually not only making some money, which is the hard part, but also the easier part is putting out books that people love, and you get fan mail saying, I love this, you're doing it right, or calls like this, and it's just like, this is why I do it. So I really genuinely appreciate, you know, your kind words.
Well, I look forward to getting more books. I look for Arden every time in the previews. That's where I go through it. I head straight for there and try to make sure I order all of those so that we have them when they come in. So you're doing good work. Yeah. Keep it up. I really appreciate it. And I wish you much success.
Great. And hopefully I'll talk to you again while you have more to talk about.
Okay. I'm looking forward to that. Thanks, Brandon. Talking to Dave Romeo from Comics on the Green in Scranton, Pennsylvania, one of the premier comic shops in northeastern Pennsylvania. First of all, how are you doing?
Great. Thank you, Wayne. I appreciate you having me on. It's always nice to talk to you.
Same here. I'm curious because now you have the benefit of having the information finally all been released. Last week I talked to several people and we were sort of speculating a lot. Well, now we know a lot more. We know a lot about Superman. We have all 52 comics now.
Yes. They have the full solicitations. DC Comics was nice enough to send them out to retailers via email, so I'm looking at some of them right now. Everything from prices to inkers and who's doing what. And it's very informative. These are the solicits you're going to see in your catalog and online any day now.
Okay. So what's your impression, Dave? You know, you're on the front lines. You run a comic book store. So you actually are probably getting a fair idea what the fans are saying and things. As a retailer, what is your impression of it? And then what are the people that are buying from you saying?
I'll tell you what, it's been a wild week or so. Let me tell you, initially when the news hit, I think everybody was stunned. Everybody was shocked. We had heard rumblings that something like this might be in the works. But I think most fans and retailers all thought, well, DC's going to pull something like an Age of Apocalypse thing that Marvel did, where the or even a Heroes Reborn, where the parts of the universe will change, but it's all going to be fixed or something. And that doesn't sound like what they have in mind here. It sounds like it's just a company-wide shakeup to get new readers and to just make things more exciting. Mm-hmm. So initially when I heard that, I was skeptical, a little nervous, I have to say. Sometimes fans look for a reason to jump off a comic and renumbering and restarting and changing things. Some people, they just had enough, even longtime fans of things like X-Men, Spider-Man, Batman. They just, if they don't like the product, in the end, they just don't buy it, especially if you start hitting up $3.99 price tags on the comics. But I will say, as the week has progressed and the creative teams have started to come out, what I'm seeing from and hearing from my customers is actually very promising, where I'd say 99% of them are just saying, well, we're going to see what happens. We're going to read the books. We're going to try some books out, and we're going to buy what we like. And if the books are good, we're going to buy them and stick with them. I think I've only heard one or two people actually pull the whole disgruntled, I'm not buying anything. They've manipulated the market for one too many times. Mm-hmm. But I think they're in the vocal minority. I think the average fan wants to see something exciting. Mm-hmm. They may regret missing some of their books that they enjoyed that might be going away or certain characters might get changed. But in the end, I think the bottom line from what I'm hearing is if the books are good, they're going to buy them.
Well, that's good news, I guess, for DC. The question that I guess we have to ask is, and in your impression, do you think that DC, by doing this, is actually going to overtake or run equal with Marvel?
They're always just a little step behind. Occasionally, they'll get the number one spot with a few books or a few events. But overall, Marvel does get a few percentage points over them in the market. They will get a boost from this. There's no getting around it. I don't see Marvel have anything to counter this. I know Marvel recently said that they're canceling Uncanny X-Men. They're going to be relaunching maybe two books, so on and so forth. But that kind of thing happens all the time. I'm not canceling Uncanny X-Men. It happens all the time. But I think this, well, at least for the final quarter, is going to help DC, and I'm sure that their shareholders will be very happy too at Time Warner if they see a big spike in the last quarter. Mm-hmm. But over the long term, the books are going to still have to be good. They're going to have to keep these good creative teams that they have lined up. And if they're not good, they're going to settle back into mediocrity, and fans of Marvel will just keep doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see. But they're going to get a big spike, I think, at least at that last quarter of this year.
Now, see, this is one of the things that DC has been criticized for, and one of the things I've talked about before is that they aren't able really to maintain momentum. They do a big event, something big happens, like they jumped a year ahead once before. They've done things like that, but then they don't seem to be able to maintain any kind of jump that they had. It just seems they change creative teams, like Power Girl, I think, is a good example, and then they may be not quite as good. I mean, maybe they're good, but not what we've gotten used to, and then after time, it starts to fizzle out. Do you think that DC is going to be able to maintain a spike like that and any kind of momentum from this?
Well, they're going to need a commitment from the writers and artists, first of all. I think editorial is going to have to clamp down on what they expect from the creative teams. I could tell you that from what I understand, most creators involved, maybe not all, but most creators involved had to sign some sort of agreement stating that they would indeed have at least the first 3 months worth of the title before number one comes out this September. Mm-hmm. So look for some of these titles to at least begin with a bang. Maybe we'll get at least complete storylines.
The Superman, they've taken away the little shorts that just like I do with Batman every once in a while. Like, I don't know why we need the jammies, but we do, apparently.
Here for Superman 1, written by Perez, breakdowns and cover by Perez, art by Jesus Marino, the 32-pager. The new adventures of Superman begin here. What is the Man of Steel's startling new status quo? How does it affect Lois and the Daily Planet? There's no time for answers now because Superman must stop a monstrous threat to Metropolis, one that he somehow is the cause of. So that's Superman number one.
The rumor had gone around that Perez was going to draw.
I didn't think he'd be able to do double duty at this point in his career. I'm actually surprised he's even doing breakdowns. But him doing breakdowns for Marino, that's going to be pretty nice. I mean, Marino's a good artist, too, on his own. So I think that's going to be a really pretty book.
Word just came out, too, that DC's going to support all this with national TV ads.
Yeah, I was surprised. I wanted to get the details on that, but oh my gosh, I've been talking about that for a long time. I mean, the guys often talk about how maybe if they could even tack them on to something, if they're promoting toys or one of their DVDs or something, but just how 30 seconds on TV could do so much to draw attention to this type of thing. And
DC as a whole has never done it that I know of before.
Well, the company's really haven't really done it. The one big example I could think of that people still talk about from that generation is in the 80s when they introduced the G.I. Joe comic when the toys came out.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody remembers that they did the commercial for the toys. And then at the very end, it says, and check out, they had the cover of G.I. Joe number one splashed up there. It says, check out, you know, your local newsstand or whatever it said. And there's a whole generation of kids who started reading comics in the 80s because they saw that ad and they were buying the toys. That's all it took.
Interesting.
Okay, thanks, David. And we'll talk with you again sometime.
Speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
Let's talk about this week's comics. We saw a lot of good Flashpoint comics this week in the bookstore. There was Citizen Cold number 1 of 3, Deathstroke the Curse of Ravager number 1 of 3, Emperor Aquaman, which is really the book of the week for me, number 1 of 3, and Frankenstein Creatures of the Unknown number one. It's going to spin off into his own book when the new books hit. We also saw a Flashpoint tie-in in Booster Gold number 45, which is really cool. Other DC comics that are worth noting are Batman and Robin number 24, Batman Arkham City number 205, which is really flaky and setting up for the video game. We also got a lot of figures from DC. There's Brightest Day action figures, Aquaman, Deadman, Green Arrow, and Hawkgirl. All kinds of good things, as well as a DC Dynamics Sinestro statue. That's the big one. That's $195. Other comics that came out were Doc Savage number 15, Green Lantern movie prequel, which had two different covers. So one was Kilowog and one was Tomar Ray. We had Red Robin number 24, Superman Chronicles volume 9, which is a reprinting of all the Superman stories in sequence, Titans number 36, and Unwritten number 26, which I think is starting to slow down on me. I would much rather see that book come to an end. It just doesn't feel like we got much more. It just feels like it's being stretched out. I don't like that. From IDW, we had Jericho Season 3, number 6 of 6, which was a good book. I like that book. It's done by the people who did the TV show for CBS, and it's really following on the story very well. Doctor Who Fairy Tale Life, number 3 of 4, came out, which was also very good. From Image, we've got The Walking Dead Weekly, which is, of course, the reprints of all the previous comics. We've also got Morning Glories, number 10, which was particularly good this week. I really like that a lot. From Marvel, we've got The Ghost Rider number 0.1. I didn't quite care for that very much. They're going to obviously turn Ghost Rider into a woman, and I'm not quite sure that's going to fly, but we'll see how that works. We saw Iron Age Alpha number 1, in which Iron Man gets sent back into the past. We've got Kesar number 1. I've always liked that character, and he never seems to be able to hold a book of his own, but it's an interesting book. Not one of my favorites, but a good one nonetheless. Mystery Men number 1 of 5 is dealing with pulp characters. Marvel's starting to do those, and they're doing it pretty well. I like that book a lot. Supreme Power number 104 is Kyle Higgins at the writing chores, and he's doing a really strong job with that, so I like that real well. We've got Farscape number 20, Green Hornet Aftermath number 3 of 4, Jim Butcher Dresden Files Fool Moon number 2. I always love anything to do with Jim Butcher's Dresden Files, so that was great stuff. Logan's Run Aftermath number 1, Stan Lee Starborn number 7 from Boom, which is really good. From Dynamite is Total Recall number 2. And also from Dynamite was Warlord of Mars, which is also a good book. That number 7 already. I can't believe it. You can tell when a book is good when the numbers just fly by and you all of a sudden you realize you're a year into it. And those are the books that came out this week. And let's see what came into the local comic store this week. Batman Brave and the Bold Kryptonite Collection action figures. Those should be pretty good. They're based on the TV show of the same name. You've got Captain America Chase Him Down t-shirts, Captain America costume hoodies, Captain America movie deluxe action figures. I guess we're getting closer to the movie, so it must be time. There's also electronic action figures, so stand by for that stuff. There's two Doctor Who hardcovers, which should be fun for the Whovians to get, although that's kind of a letdown after all the normal stuff that's been coming out for Whovians recently. There's a Green Lantern Sleepers audio CD. The Green Lantern Emerald Knights DVD and the Blu-rays are in. The Green Lantern Movie Guardians t-shirts have arrived. There's also the Movie Master action figures are in for Green Lantern. So it's a battle between Captain America and Green Lantern this week in the stores. More t-shirts. Marvel vs. Capcom 2 Big Domes. So those should be great ones to have. There's also Punisher Beaten Pun t-shirts. There's a Rob Zombie voodoo doll. There are Spider-Man black costume hoodies and Spider-Man Last Stand t-shirts, as well as Spider-Man Take a Chance t-shirts, so lots of Spidey shirts. There are Star Wars Clone Wars Jedi Adventures in 3D. There's a Star Trek Expeditions board game, which looks like fun. There's also a Darth Vader hoodie and a Stormtrooper costume hoodie, so all kinds of good things as far as those goes. Thor is still putting out stuff. You've got Thor Nordic Gaze t-shirts. We've got Movie Megawatts Brown t-shirts. So if you haven't gotten enough Thor stuff yet, there's plenty more to get. But the thing I love of the week, and somehow it's always zombie stuff, there's a Zombie minifigure jar for $100. That's something interesting. And there's also the Zombie Target Practice t-shirt. So if you're a zombie fan, those are the things you're going to want. And those are the wonderful things in the comic store this week. That's another edition of Wayne's Comics. Thanks again to Brendan Dineen from Arden Entertainment for talking with me about Flash Gordon and the other comics that they're providing. Also, thanks to Dave Romeo from Comics on the Green for talking with me about DC Comics changes. We'll be back next week with more fun, so be sure to listen in. But until then, keep reading your comics.
so I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.